Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you are not already, you can become a Major Spoilers member by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans just like you.
And me. In this issue, what do Spider-Man and Hellboy have in common? Stick around and find out. Sleigh bells are ringing, carolers are singing. It's that time of year, and there's a light over at the Frankenstein place. So we're going to talk comics and pop culture till dawn, or until 9:15 when I need to go to bed. Light a candle to light another candle, because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
It's like a miracle, right? We didn't know if we had enough hard drive space to record this show, and yet there was more than
enough for eight shows,
eight hard drive spaces. It's a holiday miracle. Yes, this is our holiday special. We brought back all the great people that you've been wanting over the years. We've got just Matthew and I this week. Ashley's still out on vacation. And Rodrigo is sick, not feeling well. So hopefully both of them will be back and joining us in the very near future. It is post-holidays, Matthew. And I don't know about you, but there was dearth means what?
A virtual plethora of dearth. A dearth means a paucity or a lack.
Yes, there was a virtual dearth of comic book pop culture news, which is surprising because, there was that big San Diego Comic-Con this past weekend major news stories would have broken at the San Diego Comic-Con. I never heard back from anybody who said that they were going to the Comic-Con to fill in a report or anything like that. So, again, if you did go to the Comic-Con, I saw some video and some pictures, and it looked very, very empty. And not saying that that's a bad thing, because I enjoy going to Planet Comic-Con when there's not a whole lot of crowds there. I've been there when there's been hardly anybody there, and I've been there when it has been packed. And I kind of prefer it when it's kind of in between those. And that's kind of what the pictures from San Diego Comic-Con look like. Like it was not very full. So I don't have very much news stuff. Do you have any big news things going on? Did you watch any, the Hawkeye stuff over on the Disney Plus?
Not yet. We were intending to watch Hawkeye, and then we didn't. I'm actually about 4 episodes behind on Doctor Who, too. So
I
may be going into. What we actually did most of the last week, because of your portentions of doom, I had actually been ordering and getting all of the Christmas gifts.
Yeah, see, got them done
in the house and wrapped. Not completely. I've still got a few that are shipping, but we've gotten just a pile of Krimica gifts. They will.
All my stuff is supposed to. We did early shopping for the youngest. The oldest just wants money, which is fine. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, we don't do that.
But then the wife, I got her stuff that I don't think she realizes. She's said multiple times that she wanted this, but I was able to purchase it, and it's supposed to all be here. All the stuff that I've ordered is supposed to be here this week. So it was also stuff that probably they had plenty of stock on. So it's not like, it's not like a PS5, which will, there will be an empty chair for my PS5 this year. Come Christmas. We're going to set aside an empty chair for
Passover
the PS5.
It's going to be like next spring, but it's fine.
I guarantee you, I still won't be able to get a PS5 by Passover.
You probably won't. That's fine. And my thing was virtually everything, with the exception of the stuff that's coming from the UK, which I am actually going, oh dear God, is it going to get here?
Everything
came
about that.
Like, I was getting overnights. I started shopping on a Thursday. Mm-hmm. I started getting packages on Friday afternoon.
Yeah, nice.
Literally, one thing that I wanted to buy for my wife came in 9 hours after I ordered it.
Yeah, so there's an Amazon. If you order through Amazon, there's an Amazon shipping station down in Ottawa, right? Mm-hmm. Don't they have a warehouse down there in Ottawa? So that's probably why you were able to get stuff so quick. So
because I'm awesome. People are like, hey, you're awesome.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. So I got a thing about UK stuff, and then we'll get into comic book stuff. If you guys want to hear us talk about comic books, Matthew and I reminisce about comic books over on the Major Spoilers podcast pre-show that you can listen to only if you are a patron at the silver level and higher over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Yeah, we talked about all of our comic book buying habits in our stores when we were younger. But as many of you know, I have since just before pandemic time started to get into astrophotography. And then pandemic happened and that kind of put a stop to a lot of the things that I was going to do. Well, during pandemic, a lot of people took up astrophotography. So I was kind of ahead of the curve. You know, I was into it before everyone else realized they wanted to be into it. But when everyone else realized they wanted to be into it, they snatched up everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the cameras, all the mounts, all the gear, just impossible to find stuff. So over the last year or so, I have gotten a new dedicated telescope itself. It's a small one. I've got a new camera for that telescope that I just was finally able to test out the other night. But the thing that I've been waiting for is a mount that is big enough to hold this new gear, because the previous mount I had was kind of like for small telescopes and cameras, you know, just basically a star tracker kind of thing. But I wanted something that you could punch in, you know, I want to see the Andromeda galaxy and it'll slew everything to there and follow it and all that stuff. But I also knew that I needed something that was going to be heavy enough for any future telescope purchases, right? And so the most popular telescope mount has been sold out for over a year. Okay, so go back a year ago this time when I was first like, oh, I really want to go and get this telescope mount because I have some money right now for this. Right. And it was sold out then. And so, like, I have been on every wait list for every specialty scientific astrophotography distributor, whatever, in the United States since a year ago. The thing that didn't occur to me was what's going on in Europe. And I just figured they'd be sold out as well. And so I just about a month ago, I was tooling around and I found this well-known site, First Light Optical, out of the UK. And I was like, oh, they have this mount and they say they have 10 in stock. This can't be right. And I emailed the guy and I was like, is this right? Do you guys really have 10 of these in stock? He goes, well, technically we have 8 of these in stock because 2 of them are on hold waiting for a payment to arrive. And I'm like, holy crap. And so like the very next day I was able to purchase this mount that I've been searching for a year, and they shipped it super cheap. So obviously I didn't have to pay tax on this because it's UK, right? So the VAT was removed from it. The cost of shipping would have been the cost of the tax that I would have paid in the United States. And the price was almost exactly the same of what I would have paid here in the United States. I think it was maybe $10 more expensive. But it arrived about 2 weeks ago. And so I've just been waiting for some clear skies to go out and shoot. And this week, Saturday, Sunday, Monday of this week, I was able to get out and shoot. But it was just like, ah, what a miracle. Here's this package all the way from the UK that got here faster than anyone else here in the United States could deliver stuff. So if you're looking for stuff for the holidays, might want to check out some of those UK locations and see if they ship to the United States, because holy crap. And still, I got one notice from B&H Photo yesterday that they had a unit in stock or some units in stock, but still everyone that is a specialty astronomy store still are completely sold out. So it's good that you got your shopping done early, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very excited.
Still waiting on some things.
They'll be there.
Things.
I'm sure that they will be there. As far as Hawkeye goes, I'm going to be very interested on people's thoughts on Hawkeye. I was kind of like you. I was very much, I want to watch it, but then I didn't. And then finally, I think it was Friday night or something like that. Friday night or Saturday night. I finally was like, okay, it was Friday night. I will finally sit down and watch this. I thought it was good, but it wasn't the Fraction Aja run, even though it tries to lift so much of that. Material and put it into this story. It's not that. And so I was maybe a little disappointed in that. And there's some moments. It's like, why is this even happening? There's a whole thing with the kids in New York at Christmas time that doesn't make any sense. Clint could have just been doing an Avengers job and waiting to come home when he ran into the events that kicked off this story. So I don't know. The new episode comes out, what, Wednesday, tomorrow?
I think so.
I'm not on the edge of my seat to see it like I was with Loki.
Yeah. I was really psyched to see What If, but I think we waited to see the first episode of that, too.
Hmm.
So it may just be, you know, this is it's a time of year and it's ready to change. I got a thing from Facebook the other day that's like, your birthday is coming up. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Seasonal depression's already here. So, you know, I could be anything.
Well, but, so yeah, one of the things that I found that was very nice in this show was they do have Clint wearing a hearing aid.
Mm-hmm.
They make a joke out of how come he has to wear a hearing aid. But, and of course it makes sense that he would have to wear a hearing aid, but they do call out that he is wearing a hearing aid, in this series. So that's nice. So yeah, that was that. So if anybody else has watched Hawkeye and you really like it. So the nice thing for you, Matthew, is tomorrow there will be three episodes waiting for you because they released the first two on the first day.
Nice. Do we have Critical Hit tomorrow?
Yes, we do.
well, then I can't watch it, can I?
You can watch it before or after. Did you watch Hit Monkey on Hulu?
Okay. I'm never going to watch Hit Monkey. They've been trying to make Fetch happen with Hit Monkey since 2005, and I'm sick of it. I've never found anything interesting about Hit Monkey.
We had that discussion about MODOK, the MODOK show, and how it just really didn't hit for me or didn't strike home for me or anything like that. I got literally 2 minutes into Hit Monkey and I was like, no, I'm not interested in this. And I turned it off. So, yeah, I don't know if I'll go back to that. So definitely not going back to MODOK. I don't think I'm going to go back to Hit Monkey, but maybe you, dear
MODOK,
listener.
I think, what did we watch of MODOK?
We watched like the first, I don't know. I think we watched the whole first season. We talked about the whole.
Did we?
I think we did. Because at least I watched the whole season. I know Rodrigo had watched the whole season. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe, dear listeners, you liked the MODOK, the Hawkeye, the Hit Monkeys, or maybe you hated it. Let us know. Podcast@majorspoilers.com. We'll talk about that in a future episode. Did you do anything fun over the holiday, Matthew?
Yeah.
What'd you do?
I did not leave my house.
I kind
of just sort of hung out and wrapped some presents. I had some pie. Part of the issue with the holiday this year is we weren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there are some issues with visiting certain members of the family vis-a-vis the visitors.
People who don't want to get their shot.
Well, I'm not going to call anybody out as an anti-vax.
Well, you don't have to, but that's probably the main reason.
But yeah, we had we had dinner here. The kid was like, "Yep, I want this and this." And I'm like, "Fine, make it." And so they did. So that was kind of nice. And a lot of it was just kind of a Thanksgiving is an eating holiday. And my doctor's like, "You have to lose weight," and I'm so mad at her that I'm losing weight.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like being What is it? What is it called when you do something out of it? Doesn't sound like you're doing that out of spite, right? Because out of spite, you would be like, "I'm going to eat all the food."
I feel like really what it is I know my own motivations, and I feel like the best way to get me to really do something is to channel my inner brat and to tell that kid.
Brat would say, "Would do the opposite." Yeah, but the brat would be like, "I'm going to do the opposite." Right?
No. This is like, we're going to show her. We're going to be like, we're going to lose more weight than anybody in the world, y'all. So, you know, I've dropped like 10% of my body weight and I'm like, woohoo.
That's good.
And of course I had to work on Friday.
Oh yeah.
But because of the nature of my job, I only had to do about 25% of the actual job processes actually apply on a holiday. So literally sat there with 2-3 sometimes 7 minute waits, just nobody's
calling, nothing to do. Well, that's nice. Nobody called. Yeah. Billy's got a turkey bone stuck in his mouth. What do I do?
But you know, we did the thing and hung out, and I did a lot of editing, a lot of digital editing. The kid is getting ready to do their senior pictures, mm-hmm. and they're like, "Can you make this picture look good?" I'm like, "Yeah." What do you want me to do? I don't want to see this and this and this. I'm like, well, give me 2 minutes. So I edited out this and this, and then I messed with the colors, and then I'm like, you know, I need to warm this up a little bit. Make sure the eyes are in the upper third, or Steven will yell at you.
Yeah, make sure you don't put her, make sure you didn't crop out her eyes and put them on her chin or anything, Matthew. That would be horrible.
That would be hilarious.
I was like, we're going to have like the lowest low-key Thanksgiving ever. It started with Wednesday, because everybody was off on Wednesday, setting up the Christmas tree, which I was, no, actually, we set up the Christmas tree the weekend before Thanksgiving, which I was totally against, but whatever. But on Wednesday, I just cooked a bunch of chicken legs, fried them up, mm-hmm. you know, nice air fryered, really good stuff. And then I was just like, I bought a fruit platter. I bought a meat and cheese platter. I bought some dips, some, you know, some hummus and a spinach, jalapeno spinach dip, which was really good, and some vegetables, and it was just graze time. We bought a pie, and we bought a cake for my wife's birthday, because her birthday was this past Saturday. And so that's all we did. It was just like big old spread on the counter, and it's just like, if you're hungry, eat. We're not going to have a sit-down meal. It's just you eat what you want. And then I made the mistake of telling my son, because he's my youngest, that he's been watching Amphibia for the longest time, and I catch episodes here and there, but I don't understand all of the lore about what's really going on with the story. And so I told him, and they're already up to season 3. And I told him, I said, how about this? On Thanksgiving Day, you and I can sit down and we will watch the entire first season of Amphibia. And he's like, sounds great. Let's do it. And I was very excited about it until I realized that this isn't like a 12 episode Disney screwing you over with your favorite kind of show thing. No, this is a full on 20 episodes. This is 20 episodes in the first season at a half hour each. And we started around 9 o'clock and we finished somewhere around 5 o'clock. I'm glad I watched it. It was really cool. I really like Amphibia. I would put it up there with Gravity Falls. It is also by one of the people who worked on Gravity Falls. The creator is somebody who worked on Gravity Falls, and Alex Hirsch does a lot of work with Gravity Falls, either as a voice actor or lending some other talents that I don't want to spoil. But it's a really cool show. It's a really cool show that shows representation of minorities. And I think it's really, really well done. So that was my Thanksgiving. It was super low key and I enjoyed the heck out of it. I don't know if my wife enjoyed it as much because she also had to sit and watch, you know, 10 hours of Amphibia after she's already seen every episode probably 3 or 4 times. It was pretty fun. So dear listeners, I hope you, if you lived in the United States, had a good Thanksgiving. And, if you lived, outside of the United States, I hope you had a very good Thursday. If you want to share your Thanksgiving, things, then you know where to go. You need to head over to the Major Spoilers Discord. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free, or you can link your Patreon account to Discord, and then you can get access to even more hidden features. Find out more about how you can do that at patreon.com/majorspoilers. We're going to have a fair. Oh, shoot. We're already like a half hour into this show. We better get to some reviews, Matthew. We've only got 2 reviews this week. I am very surprised. Oh, we did have access to Hitman, the Human Target. I was surprised you didn't do that this week. Instead, you got Checkmate from DC Comics.
Checkmate. Yeah, because, you know, a lot of times at Major Spoilers, there is a feeding frenzy on anything that's the first issue.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in reading the last issue.
Okay.
And so this Checkmate, which is the biggest series of the summer of 2019, is out. Coming out of Event Leviathan. You may remember Event Leviathan. It was like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was the series that rolled out of Event Leviathan and rebuilt Checkmate. So there was a Checkmate, and their central organization was Steve Hunter, Manhunter Kate Spencer,
Mr. Bones.
Yeah. Green Arrow, The Question,
Nightwing,
and this mysterious character called The King, and Talia al Ghul. One of those people turned out to be a traitor.
Who was it?
Who could it possibly be?
Was it Talia al Ghul?
You think?
Was it Mr. King?
It was not Mr. King. It was frickin' Talia al Ghul.
No way.
So, yeah, this, of course, spoiler is tied alert heavily into Bendis's Superman run, which, again, mm-hmm, his 2019 Superman run.
Yeah.
So if you had been reading that book and really loving it a couple of years ago, this is totally the book for you. I don't necessarily feel like once this is all collected and you can buy it in TPB form, that's going to be a big knock on this issue. But it does not feel timely. So I went into this feeling like, wait, didn't the first issue of this come out like 3 years ago? And I'm like, no, I was thinking of Event Leviathan, which did come out in like late 2019. This series started in June of this year. And Evil Talia has been evil. And so she has betrayed the team to Mark Shaw, the former Manhunter, mm-hmm, who is also secretly Leviathan.
Mm-hmm.
In this issue. Ooh, that's a good catchphrase. I should have that every week. You have a big fight sequence. Talia gets away clean. Everybody's like, doodly doodly do. And then the unexpected thing, the one thing that I'm like, oh my God, I did not see that coming, happens when Leviathan turns on Leviathan. And the Mark Shaw, this super paranoid spy goober who's trying to kill everybody, mm-hmm, discovers that he's actually created an organization more super paranoid than him.
Mm.
And the thing that I expected, that I knew was going to happen, does happen in this issue. And it's a pretty awesome moment because, you know, guys are everywhere. The Guardian is in play. Green Arrow is in play. All these people are running around. They're having to evacuate the Hall of Justice. People are everywhere. Doobly doobly do. And finally, Lois Lane is like, oh my God, this is serious. And she says quietly under her breath, Smallville. And you know who comes when that happens?
Crypto?
He shows up.
Oh.
And then things happen. Yeah. No, her husband, you doofus.
Oh, I thought he was off planet with their son doing stuff.
Oh, no. That's later or earlier. Oh, okay. I don't know when this takes place. But there are two interesting reveals here. One, when you get to the end of the issue, a new player comes in and says, yep, you guys are now going to officially be a new checkmate. But for God's sake, don't bring in Talia al Ghul, you big dummies. They're all like, okay, we'll be spies together. But, you know, what about this mysterious guy? And their new leader, Amanda Waller, walks up to Mr. King, the mysterious guy, and says, it's nice to meet you, Commandy.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, oh, okay. Now, normally I would say, is that a spoiler? In this case, no, because that's not the big thing that is surprising about this issue. So, pacing-wise, it's problematic. I feel like a lot of these sequences end up being kind of overridden by Bendis dialogue. There's a fight sequence between Talia and Manhunter that's just all zippy-dippy Bendis back and forth. And there's a couple of moments where I think someone is saying something that's meant to be sarcastic. Like you say something at the end, I know, right? Something that happens in sort of that sort of tone, but there's no tone in a comic book, so I can't tell really. And there are the problem that I had with Bendis writing Doctor Strange was that he made Doctor Strange talk like Carl from the, you know, the grocery store on the corner. And everybody in this story feels like they have the same voice except for Lois Lane. That includes Superman, which is problematic for me. And the idea that we had to build this new team out of the ashes of a new team only to have them burn down and create the new team that we had at the beginning of Checkmate 2021, 6 months ago, had to be burnt down in order to create the new team out of the ashes of that team. And now totally this new team is going to stick around, you guys. I don't know. I don't buy it. It doesn't feel like anything earth-shattering. And it wanted to be earth-shattering. It really did. The word Lazarus Pits, or words Lazarus Pits, appears here in a very meaningful context. But I don't know. It's just, it's hard. It is. I feel like Alex Maleev is a good artist, a good painter, but doesn't really fit in the DC universe. So there's a couple of moments where Maleev is drawing, you know, something that's clearly supposed to be Clark and Lois, but it looks like, you know, Jim and Peggy from down the street. And that can be an issue when you're dealing with something, you know, like the DC universe, when you're dealing with concepts that I feel like are intrinsically above and beyond normal street level stories, but we're playing it just like a street level Daredevil story at Marvel that Bendis and Maleev have given us. I feel like it didn't work for me. Two slices of meatloaf for Checkmate number 6. It does some things well, but it does enough things wonky and just sort of exists in its own weird bubble. A problem that I'm having with a lot of comics lately. So, I mean, it honestly, in a lot of ways, it might never have needed to happen. And that's a shame.
Well, I guess it depends on if this feels like a spy story, because that was one of the things that I liked about the Checkmate from early 2000s, whenever that Checkmate series was running.
That would have come after 1 year later. So 2006-ish.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Rolling out of 52.
Yeah. I really like the spy nature of what Checkmate does. You know, this would have been, this would have been the lead up, because Checkmate was around, or at least in stories, when Wonder Woman broke Max's neck, right?
Mm-hmm. Max was part of Checkmate. I think Max had corrupted Checkmate at that point.
And so I really dig those kind of...
Checkmate originally came out in about 88, right out of the crisis.
Yeah. I like Checkmate as essentially S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, that's kind of what it is, DC S.H.I.E.L.D. And I like those kind of stories that can be told in a spy nature. And I really like when Nightwing got involved with Checkmate as one of their agents. Those kind of stories were really good. I like when you get these secondary characters like, what's his name? Kingfisher. And what was that guy's name? It was something like that. Mr. Bones. And
you're Mr. Bones. Yeah.
Yeah. I like those characters doing their behind the scenes things. And so I really dig Checkmate from that. I enjoyed the Leviathan story that Bendis was telling over in the pages of Action or Superman or whichever one it was. Action, I think. And so maybe this may be something that if it gets collected in a trade that I'll sit down and read, because I might. But did this feel like a spy adventure story? Did this feel like an Avengers with Mrs. Peel, or did this feel like a...
This felt like a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible with Superman. Okay.
All right. That might be fun for a lot of people. Listeners, you can go and check that out yourself. Matthew thinks it's only a 2. What about you? Podcastmajorspoilers.com. Let us know. I was originally going to read another book this week for the Major Spoilers podcast, but our dear fans and listeners to the Dueling Review podcast decided to vote for that unanimously almost after I'd already claimed it as my book. So if you want to hear both Matthew and I's thoughts on King of Spies, you will definitely want to check out. Oh, man. You can hear it in my voice, ladies and gentlemen. You definitely are going to want to check out this week's Dueling Review, because we're going to review the heck out of that book. And I can tell you right now that I'm kind of glad that I switched to Yummy, A History of Desserts from Victoria Grace. Now, this is a book from Random House Graphic. Random House Graphic is the kid imprint of Random House Books. This is their graphic novel stuff, and they write stuff for all ages. Yummy, A History of Desserts is literally what the book is about. It's one of those educational books done in a graphic novel format. We're introduced to a little pixie who takes us through the history of ice cream and cake and brownies and donuts and pies and gummies and cookies in all of these chapters. This is a very, very, very long book. It's definitely worth, I think, the $19.99 cover price. And this is a book for kids. If you're trying to get your kids interested in a little bit of history, if your kid shows any kind of interest in the culinary arts, I would give this to them. This might be a really great little Christmas gift or a holiday gift to give to someone who shows interest in cooking. Not only does it cover the entire history of ice cream over the course of 20 pages, Matthew, which is kind of interesting because they spend about a page or two per very specific points in history. They talk about like Nero and how he would have ice with wine and fruit on it, and you know how then that evolved into this, and how that evolved into that, and how what the people in Baghdad were doing with this stuff. So it's really kind of cool to go and learn some historical facts in there. It's done in a very cutesy way. I think if you have a someone who is hardcore into comics, this book definitely isn't for them, because it's very cutesy as far as all of the art goes. And it's probably aimed more towards women than it is men, but I found it very enjoyable. Probably the best part about this is, and this is why I think it's a great gift, is that, you know, after you read about, you know, the history of ice cream, there's a whole recipe on how to make ice cream, make your own ice cream. And it's done in a very, you know, low key way. So it's just like, get a bag of ice, get a bag of this, and put these ingredients in, and then shake it around. Yeah. Yeah. And then shake it around. And then the next thing you know, you got ice cream, and they got a recipe for cookies. And I forget what the gummy recipe is for that one, but it has something to do with, no, they make a blueberry pie. There's a blueberry pie that you make in here as well. And so I think that's kind of a neat thing. Your kid or whoever, even an adult could read this if they want to, can read about the history of cake. And then there's a recipe on cake. And then you can go and make that, and you can feel like you've had a little connection with history because you've read it, and now you've made it, and then you're going to eat it. So this is a really kind of a cool book. I don't think it's for everybody, but I do think, again, if there is somebody in your life, a young child that is into cooking, this might be the perfect gift for them, or just to get them interested in it. Order it now. It's out right now. It's out this week from Random House Graphic. You can find it on all of the various bookstore sites, etc. Yummy, A History of Desserts from Victoria Grace. It's not going to be deep. It's not a Brian Michael Bendis dialogue that runs throughout this piece like Matthew would talk about in Checkmate. Very simple dialogue, very simple interactions, very basic explanations on stuff. You know, they're not going into, you know, why Nero was a bad guy or anything like that. They're just saying, hey, here's what Nero enjoyed, and here's what people put onto it. Yes, he did send slaves to go and gather the ice from the mountains. So there's those parts in it. But overall, I really enjoyed it. I'm going to give it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5, or 4 slices of leftover turkey out of 5, or I ate 4 slices of the 5 slices of pumpkin pie that were left over from Thanksgiving. Actually, I only had 1 slice of pumpkin pie this year. The youngest ate most of the rest of it. Nice. So there you go. Yummy, A History of Desserts from Random House Graphic. 4 slices of meatloaf. It's an enjoyable little book. I'm hoping that there is, because again, Matthew, ice cream, cake, brownies, donuts, pie, gummies, and cookies. You're going to make chocolate chip cookies. That's the recipe in that. I have a feeling that Victoria Grace has probably in her back pocket more, you know, yummy, even more history of desserts. Or maybe she will do a thing on yummy, A History of Sous Vide, or, you know, things like that. I think that she probably has something in her back pocket waiting to come out as a sequel to this. So you could have a whole series of these books on your shelf, and these could be my first cookbook series done in comic book form. So there you go. I will say this is entirely more enjoyable. I've always thought in the trade paperback segment of one of these shows, I don't think we've done it, but I've always thought it would be fascinating to do one of those graphic novels on like statistics, where they try to explain things like statistics or physics or something.
We call them in Kansas statistics.
Yeah. In comic book form. And I've read a couple of those, and they're like dry AF. But this is kind of like the fun version of that. So if you've read some of those other ones, then you kind of know what you're getting into here. So there you go. All right. It is the Christmas time. It is the holiday time. So we're going to read a couple of holiday books, because I can tell you, looking at the schedule for next week, we need to wrap up our Star Trek crossover events for this year. So next week is Star Trek Planet of the Apes. Then we have Spider-Man Master Planner that should. Spider-Man comes out this week, right? So we should have flipped that. Dang, these Hollywood people and the always moving movies around. I had scheduled the Spider-Man Master Planner for the No Way Home release, but I think that comes out December 3rd now. Maybe it doesn't. Whatever.
Oh, they may.
And then we have our two wrap-up episodes to wrap up the year, so we don't have a whole lot. So if we're going to do anything that is very specific to the holiday season, it is this episode right here. And so this year I went, I don't know if we've done these before or not. Some of them seemed familiar. We went back into the archives and we pulled out Hellboy, A Christmas Underground by Mike Mignola and Dark Horse Comics, released in 2015. Hellboy spends Christmas underground with dead guys as he tries to save a dying woman's, I don't know if he's trying to save the soul of her daughter or granddaughter or somebody that haunts the house. Mm-hmm. But yes, this is probably, I know that Hellboy deals with a lot of religious things. Just that's the nature of dealing with demons and whatnot. So you run into Christianity quite a bit in Hellboy books, but this one is, I think, probably the most Christianity Hellboy book, that we've read, not only because it's a Christmas book, and everything, but just the fact that we're trying to save spirits and the cross, you know, the, rosary
crucifix,
comes into play, and the crucifix comes into play a lot in driving out the demons in this story. So I thought that was kind of fascinating in itself. And then of course the priest that's trying to do last rites on this old woman doesn't seem to be shocked at all by a red demon walking through the manor house.
Well, I mean, when did Hellboy come to the surface? The 40s?
1940s, yeah, during World War II.
So, I mean, Hellboy's been around for like half a century at this point. You figure even an old dude like that has been aware of Hellboy for...
Oh yeah, I'm sure people are aware of Hellboy. But again, if you know that he's a demon, wouldn't you, as a religious person, be more fearful of Hellboy? Or have that in
is it
this
the
guy
Ron
is,
Perlman Hellboy, or is it the Pennywise from It Hellboy? Because they're different Hellboys.
Yeah, no, this would definitely be the
Roman,
the Guillermo del Toro Hellboy.
I might be intimidated by Hellboy, but I think, you know, I'd also be like, ooh, kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, if anything, I guess
like if Justin Bieber showed up at my doorstep, I wouldn't like invite him in, but
well,
it would
no,
be
you
interesting.
Never,
to hang
you
out.
Never invite a, you never invite a celebrity into your home. What are you Stop. Crazy? They come into your home and then all of a sudden they're just eating all your food and sleeping in your bed. So yeah, you don't want that to happen. I guess the one thing that may be why someone like a priest might be very accepting of Hellboy might be because it only confirms their belief system and their faith system, right?
Well, I mean, he is living proof of, you know, good and evil and the
Christian demons. Sin. Yeah. So that maybe
literally the son of Santa.
Yeah. So maybe that is the thing that makes it have a lot more sense. We do get to see Hellboy fight his brother, the boar guy that we've seen in the Hellboy Goes to Hell issue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. What else about, go ahead.
I really love the fact that at no point do they say vampires.
Right.
But clearly vampires.
And,
You know, it feels to me like the old lady's daughter wandered out and got vampirized.
Oh, okay. I thought that she had just been poltergeisted away, kind of, you know, not necessarily sucked into the TV, but essentially a right. poltergeist situation. And so now she was trapped on this other side with all the demons and she didn't want to be there. And so Hellboy comes in and punches the crap out of a bunch of demons. And then... shows off the rosary and the crucifix and everything catches fire and the old lady dies the end, but maybe vampires, I guess.
The old lady dying actually is kind of almost a bittersweet moment at the end mm-hmm. where Hellboy's like, yeah, she thought I was Santa and she's a nice old lady.
Yeah.
And I was like, I kind of like that ending where it's, you know, Christmas Eve is over. The danger is past. It's Christmas mm-hmm. morning. Mm-hmm. The old lady's burning to death in her manor house.
Yeah.
All is right with the world.
Well, right. Because, you know, as the story ends, the sun is coming up. I don't think it's midnight mass time. I don't think it's that part. But it's almost like the Yule log has burned through the night, kept us bright. Now we're mixing our different religious
right. We've got
stuff
to
together.
The eighth day.
Yeah.
And
and the log was still burning.
The old lady, it was a Yuletide, burned for 8 days.
It was a Yuletide miracle. But yeah, so then, you know, the danger is over, and now we are into the light of the new day. And so now the manor house can burn. They really don't explain how the manor house catches on fire, because the priest is like, and yeah, maybe vampires, because he's like, oh, I just couldn't, I didn't have it in my heart to stab her with the stake like you wanted me to.
Right.
And Hellboy's like, yeah, I can understand that. And he's like, but she passed. And Hellboy's like, okay, that she was a nice old lady. And he's like, what about the fire? And the priest is like, I have no idea how that started. And they're like, okay. And then they just walk off as the manor house burns.
Yeah. I feel like this showed up in one of our Hellboy
collections. Yeah. In fact, we're reading this from one of the big trades, the short story trade.
Yeah. I think it's in like volume 3 or volume 4, but I like it. I like fact that it addresses Christmas, but it addresses Christmas from a BPRD standpoint, and it doesn't break the nature of Hellboy or Christmas to have Hellboy running around on Christmas. There's even, you know, a really sweet moment where the hallucinating old lady is like, I know you, your Father Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And Hellboy is just like, sure, lady, whatever. But I really kind of feel like this is one of those stories that at the end, there's been a lot of death and things are on fire and, you know, zombie mice or whatever. But it's also got kind of an upbeat ending, in that the old lady's either zombie or vampire daughter has come back and reunited with her. And, you know, her ring turned into a lizard for some reason. And it's kind of a happy ending Hellboy style. And I like that. I feel like, you know, you get to the end of this story and it's not like we've been listening a lot of Christmas carols.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, there's a line in that one Christmas carol that goes, there'll be scary ghost stories and something, something. And I'm like, are there scary ghost stories? And I realized Dickens' Christmas Carol.
Christmas Carol is a horror story. Yeah.
And it ends with that weirdly upbeat note, even though, you know, people are dead and Scrooge is definitely going to H-E double hockey sticks. And this kind of feels like that a little bit.
I see where you're coming from on. I see where you're coming from on that. I do feel like there's a melancholiness melancholy that permeates the ending of this story. But at the same time, it feels hopeful in that, you know, that everyone has found their version of peace in this. And so I think there is that. Yeah, I think there is that hope moment in there, but it's tinged with the melancholy of everybody died.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of where the winter festival is. You know, you get to the point where it's dark and it's cold and we're going to light some lights and we're going to do something, and you know, we're going to celebrate the fact that we didn't freeze to death again, you know.
Yeah.
And you break it down, you get to the end, she saved her little girl and she thought I was Santa Claus. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, that's good. Also, in my head, Hellboy talks like Torque. hey, how's it going? Merry Christmas,
Mitch. I always find him, I oddly find him having a much higher pitched voice. I know when you get the grumpiness of Ron Perlman, or you get the grumpiness of the gravelly voice of Stranger Things going on in there, everybody expects a little deeper baritone. But always, every time I see Hellboy say, ah, crap, I always just hear him going, ah, crap, you know, kind of in a higher pitch as opposed like to,
Bart,
ah, crap.
Bart Simpson sort of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But with maybe a little bit more bassy, maybe a Milhouse in that sense.
Yeah.
So there's Hellboy, A Christmas Underground. It is part of the Hellboy short stories collection. So you can find it there and probably another collected volumes that are out there. There's probably a whole volume of nothing but the holiday stories that Mike Mignola has told over the years. I'm pretty sure there's one where Hellboy fights a demon Santa Claus somewhere in my memory castle. But then we're going to flip over to Marvel Comics and Darwin Cook, the late great Darwin Cook, as he tells a Spider-Man tale set on Christmas Eve as New York City gets snowed in, and who finds the kids? Is it Peter Parker? Peter Parker finds a bunch of little kids that got separated from their school trip. And so he brings them to the Daily Bugle, where everyone is having their Christmas party. And so there's little kids running around causing J.J. Jameson all sorts of headaches and trouble. Meanwhile, The Fantastic Four are looking for Crystal. She's disappeared. Mm-hmm. And then we also have, what's the third plot story?
Flash Thompson is dressing up as Spider-Man for something.
Yep, Flash Thompson is dressing up as Spider-Man at the local Macy's or whatever it is, big department store. And of course, mayhem ensues when the Puppet Master takes control of Flash Thompson, Spider-Man, and it's revealed that he's already captured Crystal, and he's having them rob the Macy's. And then, of course, the Fantastic Four have to get involved. Wasp is there because she is shopping with Sue and who's the other
Medusa.
Woman? There? Medusa. Yeah, yeah. They're all shopping together. And meanwhile, J. Jonah Jameson is terrorizing the children by telling them how bad Santa Claus is, and then Spider-Man is. And then he hears that Spider-Man's terrorizing Macy, so he takes all the kids down there to see how bad Spider-Man is. And then, of course, Peter Parker shows up and is like, wait a minute, that's not what's going on. And it's a big fight. And I got to say, as much as I like Darwin Cook as a writer mm-hmm. and an artist, this story is all over the place.
This is very, very silly. And it feels very stream of consciousness.
Yes, very much so.
And I'm really okay with Darwin doing, you know, silly kind of whimsical art, you know, a big head Spider-Man with tiny limbs, very cartoony.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, Darwin's Medusa. Oh, my God. I would marry a Darwin Cook picture of Medusa. But, yeah, when you really break this story down, it's just like it's a roller coaster ride.
It's shenanigans.
And you get to the end and it doesn't stop. It just sort of shoots off into the
You know what it feels like? It feels like an Animaniacs episode.
Yes. That is what I was thinking. It's like a Looney Tunes of some sort where mm-hmm. just wacky things keep happening. And then a possessed Flash Thompson ends up with a chainsaw. You know, there's elements of the craziness of Gremlins, which mm-hmm. also takes place at your Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
There are all sorts of stuff in here where you're like, hey, we're referencing other holiday stories, but it's weird to see Darwin do cartoony Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then a more realistic Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. Even the Thing looks, you know, realistic.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is this tiny little wiry guy. I mean, it's interesting. I don't know that I hate it, but I also, you know, part of my problem with the Tangled Web series when it originally came out back in the 2000s was it was every episode or every issue of this book is out of continuity.
Right.
Which means you can kind of have that moment of wee, but you also don't really have any grounding element. And of course, you know, the rule of alternate realities don't count. So let's just kill everybody and be done with it.
Well, I mean, they don't go that far. I mean, they tie everything up very nicely and everyone has a Merry Christmas. Everyone's able to get home and Peter gets to go home to Mary Jane and Aunt May and everybody else gets to have their moments. Even JJ is even nice enough to make sure the kids get home safely and all those things. I think that there's some very fun kid humor to be found in this book, but there's also some like mm-hmm. kind of adult humor too, because when Crystal and Sue Richards and Wasp go shopping, mm-hmm. Sue keeps saying, oh, Franklin wants this Fantastic Four playset, but I don't know if that's appropriate or not. And they make a comment that's like, oh, because you don't think it's appropriate for Franklin to play with his family. And then they're like, or is it because the action figure has such a big butt on you? And they just keep joking about how big, you know, how big of a butt the Sue Richards action figure has all throughout the rest of the issue. And it's just like, okay, maybe that's also kitty humor, but it's also kind of adult. In a way. So there is that. And Darwin is
sculpted that butt.
Right.
Darwin
is no stranger to putting in a little risque and also a little fun at the same time. You know, this seems right on target for the way he was as a creator and everything that I had read of his as a creator. He's of course passed and that's a huge tragedy, but, it was kind of fun. I don't think I had ever read this comic before, so this was kind of a nice holiday treat.
I have definitely read this one, and part of it, I think, is that Jay Bone is also involved in this. And I don't remember if Jay, like,
as the writer
inks or if Jay, yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things where they're like, hey, we're co-creators. And I believe that this was written and drawn in concert by Darwin and Jay Bone. But I also kind of get a feel of, you know, when we say, hey, look, stream of consciousness, that may be really what we're getting. It may be one of those things where they were like, hey, I'm going to draw this page and you draw the next page and I'll be in Scotland before you. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. I just feel like by the time you get to the end of this story, you're like, and all a good night and thank you for being done. As nice as it was to see some classic Marvel Universe stuff, I really feel like Hellboy, you know, beating people up and an old lady burning in the mansion is kind of more to my taste than this particular story. And
yeah,
maybe I'm just old and mean.
No, I was going to agree with you. Like I said, this issue, the story is kind of all over the place. And I like your stream of consciousness. They were sharing, you know, splitting writing duties, almost like,
I wrote this page and then Jay had to pick up the next page.
My understanding is that's how they did Illuminatus trilogy, not Darwin Cook and Jay Bone, but, Robert Anton Wilson and Robert Shea, that they were basically passing pages or chapters back and forth to one another. There's not really chapters in that book. And saying, okay, now you pick it up. Now you continue it. So I could see that kind of happening here. I was trying to get to the inside front cover of this to see where Bone is listed and what his, and it just says,
by Darwin and Jay Bone.
Yeah. By Darwin and Jay. Yeah. Yeah. So it doesn't list anything else. So yeah, maybe that's what they were doing. Of these
number 21 or number 17,
number 21, there was one, there's a number 11, I believe, which was also another holiday issue. That while I was looking for the code, the Amazon code, it popped up the issue number 11. And I was like, oh, there was a Christmas holiday issue before this. We should have done that. Because honestly, I didn't enjoy this one as much as I enjoyed the Mike Mignola Hellboy one.
At the Grand Comics database, Darwin Cook script, Jay Bone pencils, Darwin Cook inks.
Oh, okay.
Colors by Matt Hollingsworth.
Right. Now, Hollingsworth is listed in the credits on the comic. So that makes sense. Okay. Because it, okay. That makes a lot more sense because there's moments in this where I was
this doesn't feel like Darwin. Stuff here that's like,
Interesting. It's a fun issue. You know, if you want some Darwin Cook, Spider-Man stuff, I mean, I don't know if there's much of that out there. So this may be the only place you can get it. So, you can go check it out. But of the two, it's my least favorite of these two. That being said, the Hellboy one is kind of grim and melancholy. So if you're looking for a happy Christmas cheer, Spider-Man's probably going to be more your thing. Final thoughts from you, Matthew?
21. I feel like, you know, having a melancholy Christmas this year, it's probably, you know, it's de rigueur. It's going to happen. Everybody's going to be like, oh, man. I'm sad and everything, but you could do worse. And I honestly feel like when it comes to any holiday story, the success or failure isn't necessarily, is it great? Or did I go into this, you know, expecting Watchmen or a contract with God?
Oh, no, it really
is. Do you feel at the end like the holiday was well served? And I think these both in different ways address bits and pieces of the holiday season. So hoop-de-doo and dickery-dock, and don't forget to hang up your sock. And
compared to our Thanksgiving one that we did a couple of weeks ago, Vision and the Scarlet Witch and Daredevil 178, of these four comics, which holiday won out? Was it Thanksgiving or was it Christmas?
Thanksgiving, but only because I love that Vision and the Scarlet Witch story so very, very, very much. Rodrigo pointed it out, that moment where Wanda's brother and dad and her husband have to go out and fight the villain together.
Yeah,
that's just such an on-point Thanksgiving metaphor that I feel like it hammers it. I mean, that Daredevil issue was probably my least favorite of the four.
Only because it's Frank Miller.
You know, well, yeah. But if you look at, like, you know, that's a 5 and a 2 for 7. This is a 3 and a 3 for 6. So, Thanksgiving won out for me.
I don't know if I'd go 3 and a 3 for these issues. I'd definitely probably go for a 4 and a 3 and for these for, and maybe a 2. No, definitely not a probably Daredevil a 2 and Vision and Scarlet Witch. I'd probably go a 3. I mean, it's kind of split. It's kind of a little above average, but I'd give that a 3. Daredevil a 2. Hellboy definitely would get a 4. Spider-Man a 2. So maybe Christmas wins over Thanksgiving. And I'm not a huge fan of Christmas. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. What do you think? Which one of those four issues was your favorite? Which holiday wins out? All you have to do is
well, we're right in
drop
the middle
us.
Of Hanukkah, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't do any Hanukkah stuff. We should have done that. But in any case, everybody, please light a candle tonight. Hopefully your oil doesn't run out. And if you have any thoughts on any of these comics, then just drop us an email, podcast@majorspoilers.com. Make sure you check out our Patreon page. If you're looking for a gift for the new year, getting yourself a whole year subscription in advance to the Major Spoilers Patreon page is an excellent deal. You save a little bit of money if you go for a year compared to month on month, but you can find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And maybe we'll have enough money to bring maybe a third person back next week. We'll have to see. In the meantime, take care, be well, and here's hoping that all your dice rolls are critical hits. And remember that we love comics and you do too. And what do we say
however
at the end of Dueling Review? Maybe Matthew
Dueling
will
review,
say something
maybe
next.
Maybe Matthew will say.
Yes, maybe L'chaim. Matthew will say that. And good night and good luck.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Stark Raven, it's like a man of iron. I might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.